listening to Life Strategies with Monique. Get ready to be empowered and inspired.
Well, hello, hello, and welcome to Life Strategies with Monique. I am so excited that you have decided to join me today. Today's episode is an extremely special episode. Today, we will be talking to a great friend of mine by the name of Roxy Pearson. Roxy has an amazing story to share with you today, and I can't wait for you guys to hear everything that it is that she has to share with you. I am so sure that you will be enlightened and inspired by her story. So stay tuned, sit back, and let's begin. Well, hello, Roxy. I'm so glad that you decided to be on our show today. I'm so excited to hear about your story and some of the strategies that you're going to share with our audience today. So let's just go ahead and let's just dive right in. And let's tell our audience a little bit about your background so they can find out a little bit more about you and some of the things that you've done.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, I'm glad to be on your show, Monique, and I appreciate you for even thinking about me to bring me on your show. Well, again, my name is Roxy Pearson. I was born and raised as Roxy Delores Winston in Mobile, Alabama. I am the fourth sibling of nine. My mother and father had six girls and three boys. We were all raised very close-knit and still is now. I went to C.F. Vigor High School in Pritchard, Alabama. I graduated in 1983 and went to college for a short time. My desire was to always become a school teacher, but because of the person whom I was married to at that time would not allow me to. Not just because he said no, but because of his actions towards it. I married at a very young age, 17, right after high school. I don't recommend this for anybody to marry at the age of 17 because they are not ready yet. I immediately had a baby after getting married at the age of 18, another wrong choice I made. I don't regret my child. I only regret getting married at that age and having a baby at that age. I was never able to fulfill any of my dreams or my passion until now.
All right. We're glad to hear that. So, Roxy, tell us a little bit about your passion on this topic of domestic violence and why you have such a passion for that.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, my passion didn't come out of a dream or a vision that I had. My passion came out of the life that I lived for 30 years. Because of what I went through as a victim of domestic violence and every form of abuse, I do not ever want to see anyone else endure what I endured for 30 long years. So I have presented my life as an advocate. I present myself as being front and center as one of the faces for domestic violence. And my passion is huge because I'm willing to do whatever it takes to see every woman living out in peace and not in turmoil. And so my passion came out of the lifestyle that I had, that I lived in.
Well, tell us a little bit about your marriage.
Yes, ma'am. Well, in my marriage, like I said, I married at a young age. I married at the age of 17 years old. Once I got married, and I want to just go back a little bit, I dated him for 9 months. And it was the summer of my junior year going into my senior year. So I was 16 when I met him, and then I turned 17 while in the 12th grade. And my mom and dad loved him because he was a very loving, sharing person, kind, did everything that that I wanted him to do or desired to do, and just was a very, very lovable boyfriend. But he asked me to marry him around about the 7th month of dating. And so I talked to my mom about it, and she told me, she said, well, you know, you have two choices. Is that to go into the military or get married? Because I had a sister who was already in college. And because of my dad being an alcoholic for most of his life until he got older and got saved and changed his life, he's an alcoholic. So a lot of the money, he made good money, but he spent a lot of it on alcohol. So mom had one child in college, and she just said she just couldn't put another child in college. So I didn't want to go to the military, and I just had him ask me to marry him. So I decided to marry. And so I married him, and I would say probably 3 months into the marriage, he became very abusive. He actually turned from like Dr. Jekyll to Mr. Hyde. He was no longer that loving, caring, passionate boyfriend that I dated for 9 months.
Can you talk about maybe some of the things that may have caused him to have been abusive? Do you think maybe it was generational, something that had happened in his family? Because I know a lot of times when we see things like that, they can be generational. It can be passed down from the father to the son, or from a mother to a daughter. Was that something you think maybe that was passed down and it showed up in him? Or was it a new cycle that started with him?
Well, I truly think that it was a new cycle because of talking to his grandmother and his sister and his mother. He didn't experience domestic violence. But what I did recognize after I left, and you know, and I prayed a lot about, you know, what could have happened, what may have happened, because in the situation, you know, being a victim of domestic violence, a lot of times we think that we made it happen, we the problem. But being free and having that mindset to be able to sit in peace and think about some things, you know, I began to realize that I believe that his came from being rejected as a child. And so being rejected as a child, you know, he grew up in a home with his grandmother. His mom, as he told me, his mom left when he was like one or two years old and never returned back to get him. So when she did return, it was always, you know, as he told me, to give presents and gifts, but never to take him back. So he became bitter and angry because he didn't have that mother figure. He didn't have that father figure because his father was an alcoholic and he left. So he really was motherless and fatherless. Mm-hmm. And it created an anger and a bitterness, and he had a spirit of rejection. Mm-hmm. And so when we got married, and I guess he felt that, because immediately after we got married, I became pregnant. And so he felt that I was going to reject him by having a baby and giving more attention like was done to him. And so immediately when I had the baby, he would... he immediately became jealous of me and the child's relationship. And so, you know, I tried to help him on many times, trying to get him to go talk to someone about what I felt that had happened to him in his younger days. When he was a child, he never wanted to admit that was the reason why he did the things he did. He never had a reason, you know. And so I just think that his was a beginning of a cycle. Yes, ma'am.
He wasn't one that drank like his father.
No, he never drank anything. He just 3 or 4 months after getting married, finding out that I was pregnant, he just became very jealous and very angry, verbal abusive, physical abusive, and just became abusive.
And we're talking about the topic of domestic violence, and a lot of people don't truly have an understanding of what that term means.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell us a little bit about define what domestic violence really is, so that our listeners can have a clear understanding.
Yes, ma'am. Domestic violence, Ms. Monique, is an intentional and persistent abusive behavior, which is based on an unequal position of power and control. Domestic violence can include a range of behaviors used by one person to control another with whom they have or have had a close or family relationship. Domestic violence takes many forms: physical, psychological, economic, sexual, and emotional, and can often be a combination of several of these. In my case, it was several. It includes forms of violent and controlling behavior, such as physical assault, sexual abuse, rape, threats, and intimidation, harassment, and controlling behaviors, withholding of finances, manipulation, depriving someone of some things, isolation, belittling, and constant unreasonable criticism. I experienced a lot of that. Domestic violence is one element in the overall issue of violence against women, which include, among other crimes, murder, rape, sexual assault, trafficking, sexual stalking, and sexual harassment. A lot of people don't believe it, but actually, there are husbands who actually traffic their wife's body. There are men that make their wives perform sex with two and three other people just for his own sexual gratification. Domestic violence often occurs over a period of time. Victims of domestic violence will experience a range of emotions, including fear, reluctance, uncertainty, worry, and stress. Domestic violence can impact upon a person's self-esteem and confidence, all of which can make leaving an abusive relationship a daunting and frightening step. And there are a lot of people who don't understand why women stay.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk to us a little bit about that, because you've talked about some of the effects and some of the emotions that come along with being abused from an individual. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Okay. As meaning as why do women stay?
Yes. Why do women stay in relationships that are sexually abusive, mentally abusive, or emotionally abusive? Why is it that they don't reach out for help or at least talk to someone or even share with someone so that they can, you know, release themselves from those types of situations? Because those situations can be dangerous. You know, potentially dangerous, as you mentioned earlier, those types of situations can actually lead to murder. So why is it that women, or even men, because I know there are cases of some men being abused, why is it that individuals choose to stay in a relationship versus leaving?
Yes, ma'am. Well, as far as myself, Ms. Monique, the reason I stayed, the number one key factor for me was fear. I feared this man so much until literally I walked around my own home as if I was walking on eggshells. The only time that I had a sense of peace is when he wasn't there, and that was just for work, because he was a homebody, and because of his jealousy and his lack of his self-esteem, he wanted to be around me all the time. So I only had a sense of peace is when he was at work. But immediately when he walked in the home, I immediately went in that state of fear. And so that was my number one key. Then my second reason for not leaving was because of a financial situation. He was the breadwinner. Even though I was a banker for over 20 years, people often think bankers makes a lot of money, but we don't. But he was a first-class welder at a shipyard, and he made a lot of money. So I financially thought that if I left, I wouldn't be able to take care of myself and my two children. But even in that's not true. That's a myth, because you can take care of yourself even with a little amount once you seek help as far as a shelter or government shelter or, you know, even low income apartments. And there's always a way where a woman, once she escapes, she can still be financially able. A lot of women stay because of shame, don't want anyone to think that that she's living this way, or even that her husband is that way. A lot of women leave for concern for the children. Me myself, I stay because I wanted my children to have the father figure. Low self-esteem. A lot of women are comfortable in a domestic violence situation because a lot of women's, that is their first husband. And a lot of women, that's their first relationship. Me, myself, that was the first relationship I ever had. So we are comfortable in that place and familiar. That's familiarity. This is all I know. And then there are even a situation where I was in. I didn't even know that was domestic violence. I thought that that's just the way it was, because I saw my mom being abused, not physical, but the verbal, the financial. I saw her being, then I saw my grandmother, her mother, being abused. So it was a generational cycle for us, for me and my family.
Right.
So that's all I saw. So I thought that's just the way it was. So I didn't think that I was in an abusive relationship until years later when I started doing some research. And then another thing, Ms. Monique, that a lot of people just cannot believe. A lot of women stay because they truly love their abuser. Mm-hmm. Unreal, but they truly love them. They love them and they think that they can change them. They love them and they feel like if I continue to do everything that he wants me to do, then he will love me back. Only to find out for myself that the more you give in to them, the more they're going to want you to give in. You can never give enough. Mm-hmm. And then some women feel responsible. Their abuser make them feel like I'm this way because you made me this way. It's because you don't do this right or you don't do that right. And so it puts us in a state of thinking that, hey, maybe it is me. And so you have to realize that you can't make anybody love you. You have no responsibility to how they behave. You're all responsible for how you behave. And then a lot of women stay because of a PTS. Okay, I might not be saying it right. PTS, and that is postpartum stress. And so even in that, that's a place that I was in for a while, but then I got treated and then I realized when I got out of it that I still had a lot of those symptoms. But a lot of women they have PTS while they're in their the relationship. And so that's where we not one more come in at, because when you have PTS, you don't have the mindset to function on how to get out. You're silent. You don't have enough energy to get out. And a lot of women don't have the feet to get out and go and find, because a lot of men isolate the women's. And so that's where we come in at. And we do all the footwork work. We do the leg work. We do the voice form. And so me, myself, I know that when I was being treated for PTS, I didn't have a mindset. I didn't even have enough energy to even want to get out. So a lot of women stay for that reason. And then you have other reasons why women stays. They feel frightened and uncertain about what the future will hold. They feel as if the best interest is for to stay in the home so the children can have a roof over their head. They feel ashamed and reluctant to tell or seek help. Have such low confidence and self-esteem that making decisions is a confusing and difficult task, as I spoke earlier. Still have feelings of love, as I spoke of earlier, for partners and fond memories of how things used to be and hope that they would be that way again. Ms. Monique, for a long time, I was caught up in the way it used to be, the dating scenery. And I used to always feel that, hey, if he was once that way, he can always be that way again. So I always had hope that he was going to go back to the way he was when I met him. Only to find out 30 years later, he would never be that person again. Never.
So when you talk about the abuse went on for 30 years, is the abuse something that we consider to be intermittent? Is it like a daily, or is it weekly or monthly? Or, I mean, was it like a terror that you had to experience like every day? Because I know you said you had to walk around on eggshells.
Yes, ma'am.
Because you really never know at what moment this individual may, you know, blow their lid. But yes. So that our listeners can have a better understanding as to how often an individual may be subject to abuse. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, ma'am. Well, as far as me, like I said, the first three months was good. And then after about 3 months is when he turned to Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Now, the first 5 years, he fought me, which was physical abuse. But after 5 years, he didn't physical hit me anymore, which I thought was going to be something that he just wanted a better marriage. Only for him to go to sexual abuse and verbal abuse and mental abuse. And so the first 5 years, I would say maybe every other weekend, he would always try to pick a fight And so my mom and my sister, they can witness to this because I always call them to come to my rescue. And my mom and my dad or my sister will always come to my rescue only for them to tell me that, you know, it may work out and to go back, because my mom lived that way. You know, so my mom stayed with my dad for over 30 years of abuse. So all she could tell me is what she was doing is to go back. So I would always go back only to think that it was going to get better. And so I would say, Ms. Monique, in those 30 years, I would say maybe 5 were good. And that's calculating them as days, not as straight years, as days. Most of my days with him were experiencing a bitter man, a man who would look at you and shrink his nose at you as if he didn't even like you. Most of my nights I went to bed in fear. I would sleep with my Bible under my head because I watched my mom sleep with her Bible under her head, only to find comfort and peace in the hope that God will allow me to wake up the next morning. I would be threatened. I have had a gun pulled on me. I've been ran off the road with his car hitting my car. I have experienced so many types of abuse. And so I would say in 1 week, in a 7-day period, 4 of those days was violent.
Wow.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, and you mentioned your children, because I know you say when you got married, you had your first child, but now you say children. So yes. you had 2 children?
Yes, ma'am. I have 2.
So can you talk a little bit about how domestic violence affected your children?
And yes, ma'am. You know,
how does it affect them overall?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. My son was the first one born, and he was born immediately after marriage. So with me still being young, like 18 when I had him, and his dad, at that time, he was about 22. My son experienced, and those first early years, remember I said that the first 5 was physical fighting? So my son experienced a lot of seeing us fight. So my son endured a lot of turmoil and traumatic actions he saw, and it would be even to the point to where I wanted to leave, and he would grab my child just to keep me from going. And there would be times where I would call my mom and my sister, and they would come to our rescue. And I remember a time where when we first got married, we stayed with his grandmother. And so he was physically abusing me at his grandmother's house. And I grabbed my baby and tried to leave, and he took the baby from me. So my mom and my sister made it over there. He wouldn't give nobody the baby. He would not give us the baby at all. And so my mom ended up having to bite him just for him to release the baby out of his hand. And so there were times that my mom would come to my rescue, and he would literally fight my mom. I remember a time he stole my mom with a knife to try to kill her, and a neighbor came with a gun just to get him from my mom. I experienced so much, and I'm not ashamed of what I went through, because evidently I wasn't in the state or the mind of being able to get out of it. Number one, I didn't know how to get out of it. Today, where we have domestic violence front and center, it wasn't front and center back then. You didn't hear anybody talking about domestic violence. They didn't talk about it in the churches. They didn't talk about it in the schools. They didn't talk about, you didn't see it in the library. You didn't see it on TV. It always looked as if it was okay if that's the way your husband treated you. And so my daughter, she came like 7 or 8 years later, and she was like his little princess. He never showed her any violence towards me or my son. He would always wait until she was either asleep or in another room or either gone with my sisters or something. But my son endured the same violence I endured. There would be times that I would have to take my son and run with him and take him to someone's house just to spend the night to keep his dad from fighting him, hitting him. And that was a time, it came a time in my life where my son had became a teenager, and when his dad would violently attack me in some type of way, my son would try to retaliate with his dad to try to, you know, protect me. And so that would cause him and his dad to get an altercation. And his dad would literally fight him as if it was another man. on the street. And he did so many embarrassing things to my child. To this day, I don't understand why he treated my son that way, but not his daughter. And this is his son with his own name after him, you know. And I recall one day we was at a church function, and the church had formed a youth basketball team. And we was at this gym, and our church was playing basketball against another church. And it was during the time where the younger kids had just started wearing their pants belt loose so that they can kind of sag. Well, me and his dad, we didn't believe in the sagging. And so my son was raised in the church, so he knew how we felt about that and why we felt that way. So my son was trying to learn how not to sag. But this particular day at the gym, they were playing basketball, my son pants began to sag a little. So his dad embarrassed him so by hollering out there amongst all these people and all of his other peers, and hollered out and said, "Boy, pull your pants up." So my son was so embarrassed and looked back at him and looked at me, and I just basically told him, just keep playing, Paul. Well, his dad felt like he was ignoring him and didn't pull his pants up, but it was only due to the child playing the ball. He went out of the bleachers, went down to the floor and pulled my son's pants up in the back, which caused a wedgie in front of all of these people. And my son retaliated back, and they fought on the floor. And so immediately the both pastors of the different churches, they immediately stopped the game, and we all departed and went home. And I had never been so mutilated in my entire life. And then this put such a wedge up between him and his dad. And so I have experienced so much abuse to my son from his father that I felt so awful about, until I felt like that it was my fault for staying. But yet I still stayed, thinking that it would get better, their relationship would get better, only to find out that it never did get better. Even to this day, Miss Monique, my son has married and has two kids, and he have caused some type of violence between his own marriage, and it's because of the learned behavior that he learned from his father, from what he saw, like I did. He learned how to become an abuser. I learned how to be a victim. Wow. Yes, ma'am. And as far as my daughter, she ended up going off to college. She ended up being the school teacher that I wanted to be. So she never saw her father in that way, but she know he is that way, because she knows that the things that me and my son talked about in front of her, because when she got to a teenager stage, I didn't want her to be in denial about her dad. And so now that we're separated and divorced, and he's in a position where he can't go anywhere, she goes and visits him. I don't stop her because it's still her dad, but my son never visits him after the divorce because of the mistreatment he received.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And it's such a story that I know our readers, listeners out there are going to be touched by. What would you say to someone who is currently experiencing that type of abuse at this moment? What would you say to them to help them? Because I know that's part of your mission and your passion to, you know, keep this from happening to other young women. What would you say to them? What would be some of the key things that you would encourage or inspire them to do at this point if they are in a relationship that is could lead again to something dangerous? What would you say to them at this point?
Yes, ma'am. Well, Ms. Monique, I know that there are millions of women out there that are experiencing the same height of abuse that I endured. And some are probably listening now, maybe not to the extreme of what I went through, but some may be experiencing just the emotional, the verbal, the sexual, the physical. But it don't matter what form of abuse that you are that you're receiving right now, you're living in, it's a dangerous situation. And so I would say that if it's something that you can do about it, as far as if you can get out and go to different programs to find out more information on domestic violence. I say seek that. If you need to just get on your computer and find out what domestic violence is, because some women don't know what it is and don't know how to get out of it. There are strategies on Google that you can Google on how to escape. There are ways to tell you what to be doing in an event to a future escape. But I would say that it's a very dangerous situation to stay in. You may think that nothing can become of this, but I'm here to tell you that, yes, people can actually die from you living in that situation. It may not be you. It may be your children. It may be some of your siblings. It could be your neighbor. It could be somebody just coming to your rescue and your abuser harm them. And that's, you don't want to live with that. So I would say that you may not feel that you need to take this big step and just leave like I did when my mind was made up. But I do say, talk to someone. There are so many programs. There are so many shelters that you can talk to. There is a domestic violence hotline that is national that you can call and they will just chat with you. You don't have to be ready to go anywhere, but you need to talk to someone. Even myself, not one more domestic violence victim. I'm here just to talk to someone. There was a time where I didn't have anybody to talk to. So it's a blessing that that nowadays women have somebody to talk to. Women have places that they can go. But I just want to tell you that you're going to have to seek for your own help there. There's probably 1% the money. It always seemed like it was a hole in our pockets that was just sinking the money out. And that's because God could not bless his blessings, that God could not bless him to keep what he had. So when I came out and I found my peace and my joy and my hope in God, then everything that I received, it's like God was doubling and doubling. And it's so true that God will give back everything that the canker worms ate from you. I left a home that was so big, and I stayed there because of this 1800 square feet home. I stayed there because of it, but I had no peace in it. There were places and parts of the house that I never even could go in because I had this fear he was going to come in there. I had a big master bathroom that I couldn't even lock the door because he would not allow me to lock the door. So I always had to take showers. I couldn't even take a sit down bath because I was afraid he was going to come in there and drop something electrical in the water to kill me. So I had a home that people looked on the outside that I had, that it was a home. They looked at it as if it was a kingdom, only to find out that it was a prison. There were rooms I never even went in. It was months before I could go in there. And now that I live in an apartment that's probably 1,000 square feet, it's more peaceful to me. It's more of a home to me than I ever had in those 30 years of what I would call a prison. So don't live in a prison. Don't stay in prison when God has already made a way of escape for you to be free.
Wow. That's awesome. And you just mentioned Not One More Domestic Violence, which I know that is your nonprofit organization that was developed by you. So you are the director of that. Could you talk to us a little bit about Not One More DV Incorporated? Tell us about your organization and what it is that your organization does.
Yes, ma'am. Well, Miss Monique, Not One More, as I say again, it was not formed out of a vision or a dream I had. It was formed out of a passion that came from my tragedy. And it was a passion to not see not one more person to endure what I endured. What Not One More is a bigger goal, to one day open a shelter for women and children who are experiencing domestic violence. And in that, to make sure that if she have a son, that her son and her daughter would be able to go to the shelter with her. One of the reasons, Ms. Monique, that I stayed so long also is when I did hear about a couple of places in Mobile that would shelter me and my children, I wanted to find out when I called that my son can come because he was a male. And so that would leave me in an awkward position for me and my daughter to be safe, but leave my son in harm. So I wasn't never willing to do that. So it kept me in that place of being abused over and over again. So not one more want to be able to one day open up a shelter where a mother and her children, whether boy or girl, can come, be able to enter. That was a part of our goal. Also, some of the accomplishments that we have accomplished has been performed in several of our rallies and walks in Mobile, Alabama. We have organized many walks and rallies, which if someone wants to view them, they can by Googling Roxy Pearson or Not One More Domestic Violence. One of our rallies was our keynote speaker was Ms. Vivian Figueres. Ms. Vivian Figueres is the Senator of Alabama, and she came and she keynoted that for us. Not One More presented a domestic violence skit to many adults and children. We presented this skit in schools, churches, apartment complex, and many other places. Not One More has financed several victims so that they could flee from their abuser. A few even escorted out of state by the police department. Not One More myself has published a book and in the process of publishing another book. And the one book that has been published, it will be released on Mother's Day. And that we want to use those funds. We want to use those funds to help finance other programs that is low on funds, on helping other women come out. There are a lot of programs that want to help women that need help, but they can't because the funding is so low. So some of our future projects also is to continue to be front and center, to be able to go into to tour, to go on book tours where we can actually get our voices out there and get these books out there. Not so much just to do a book sale, but to do book signings, to let them know that Not One More care. I have been published in a magazine. In 2015, I was published in a magazine called Diversity Magazine, and it is located in Mobile, Alabama. But in about a month ago, I was published again in the 2018 publication, and in that she stated that Not One More would be her face for domestic violence as long as she has her publication. And so that is, those magazines are to help other women to be able to read parts of my story in the magazine and also be able to reach out for help and let them know that they're not alone, they're not the only victim. And that's another myth that has kept women in these relationships, is by thinking that I'm the only one going through this. No, there are millions and billions of women around the world who are living and has lived in these situations. There are millions that have been killed, murdered because of these situations. And then there are millions that have survived, that are survivors. But all survivors are still not safe. A lot of survivors still live in fear of their abuser. And God has just truly blessed me because of the situation where mine's at right now. I don't have to fear. And it leaves me in a place of peace where I'll be able to help so many more. So Not One More is an organization that is the voice for those who are silent, those who are living in silence. We are the feet and the hands for those who cannot walk and cannot put their hands to the plow to get what they need to help them. Yes, ma'am.
Well, that is awesome. And congratulations on your book.
Yes,
what is, you didn't give us the name of your book. Share with my
audience
the name.
I know.
That is an amazing accomplishment.
Yes, ma'am.
And I know all of the funds are going to go towards the organization, which is also amazing.
Yes,
so share with our readers, and you said it's not going to be released until Mother's Day. That's an awesome thing as well.
Yes, ma'am.
Let us know where we can get that book. And if someone wants to get in touch with you, maybe to either talk to you or get in touch with you about maybe speaking with them or getting on an having a speaking engagement where you can come talk to them or talk to their individuals or their venue. How would someone be able to get in touch with you?
Yes, ma'am. Well, first of all, the book will be published on Mother's Day. And right now, the only way right now, you will be able to publish it on Amazon and other places. But right now, we're probably going to sell them from our website or our Facebook or PayPal or different places like that. And there are going to be several book people selling books, because this book is actually a collaboration of six women. There are six of us that came together from one woman's vision, which is Bridget Yelder. She's a publisher and an author. And she came with the vision where six women that had been in very abusive relationships that have survived death. And we all came together and created this book. And it's called Victorious Women of Purpose. Victorious Women of Purpose. And so each one of us share a little of our story, but we're all also working on publishing our own individual books of our full story. Mm-hmm. So there are women in different states, and even one woman in Canada who's in this book. So our book will be all around the world. And so once the book is published on Mother's Day, then you can go to my Facebook and see exactly how you can get a copy. Also, we are taking our first tour on July the 30th with this book and our story. And we're going on Carnival Triumph. We're taking a five-day cruise. And on that cruise, we are actually presenting our book. There will be book signing on the cruise. There will be sharing of our stories on the cruise. And that way, we'll be able to church women all around the world, because there are women all around the world that will be on that cruise ship. And that will be July the 30th of this year. Also, if you want to contact me to speak, to do the skit, to educate, to bring the book for a book signing, book tour, you can reach me by going to my Facebook page, which is Roxy Pearson. That's R-O-X-I-E, last name P-E-A-R-S-O-N. Or you can contact me by email, and that is not the number one, more, D-V, at gmail.com. I'm going to explain that to you and you'll get more understanding. Not one more domestic violence victim. So N-O-T, number one, M-O-R-E-D-V at gmail.com. And you can contact me by phone, area code 251-458-5420. Yes, ma'am.
That's awesome. I am so excited about the ministry that God has birthed in you. And I know many times we often wonder what our purpose and vision is in life. And we often wonder why we go through so many things in our life.
Yes.
And we all have endured traumatic experiences. You know, I've known you for years. You've known me. We both have had traumatic experiences, but yet we both understand what God's purpose is in both of our lives. I mean, and again, what we go through, we do understand that what we go through is not for us. It's for the others that God wants us to minister to. So I am so grateful that you decided to come on our show today. I know so many women are going to be blessed just by your story and the strategies that you're sharing with them. I pray the best for you throughout your ministry. And again, I'm so excited. And I pray that our listeners, again, would be blessed. So thank you again for coming on the show today. And hopefully we're going to get back together soon.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Back on the show, because, you know, I want to continue to hear about the great things that you and your ministry are doing, your nonprofit organization.
Yes, ma'am.
And I know people will also probably want to donate to your cause, because it is a big cause. It is a big cause, and so many people need what you are bringing and sharing out to the world. So again, I pray blessings upon you today. It's so good to talk to you. I'm so glad you decided to come on the show. So we're going to end our show today. Thank you guys so much for attending Life Strategies with Monique today. Make sure that you visit Roxy on Facebook and you email her with any of your questions and call her if you want her to come speak. She would be more than happy to do so. So until next time, I pray God's blessings upon each and every one of you. Until next time.
You've been listening to Life Strategies with Monique.